Good morning. I want to call the Senate Special Committee on Conduct to order. And we have, I guess, the first order of business is to adoption of our rules. And so I'm going to ask our committee administrator, Rick, why don't you kind of give us an overview of what the rules provide.
Thank you, Senator. You have a copy of the rules in front of you. Just real briefly, committee can't amend the rules with one day's notice. Three members are a quorum. It is the chair who sets agendas. All hearings have to be posted by Senate rules. All meetings are public. Upon request, a roll call must vote. This committee is charged with investigating a complaint related to conduct of members or officers of the Senate. The committee must make appropriate findings of fact promptly with regard to the alleged violation. And the findings then are reported to the committee, and the report has to be in compliance with Senate Rule 3.3310. And then a majority vote is required for recommendations or findings. Thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules.
Senator Winters moves to adopt the proposed committee rules. Is there any discussion?
Yes, I had one question.
Yes.
Number eight, the special committee shall report findings to the full Senate. How do we do that? How is that reported? Is it reported through a measure?
That's
or?
Number 8-1, because I got 8-1 and 8.
Oh, yeah, there are two number eights.
So why don't we do this? Just for the purposes of clarification, we're going to
move that 8 to a 9.
Make the second 8 a 9 and make the 9 a 10.
Okay.
So we'll have separate bills. And so number 8.
In terms of the reporting, the summary of the report will leave this committee, be signed by the chair after being voted on by the members of the committee, and then we'll go to the floor and come up under special or committees from special or reports from special committees.
My understanding will be filed with the Secretary of the Senate. The Secretary of the Senate will put it in an order of business that it will be read at the appropriate time at the next, business day of the Senate on the floor in its appropriate location of reports.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions or discussions?
No.
Are there any objections to the rules? And we'll say the only amendment that we've put on here is to clarify that we have rules 1 through 10, changing the second 8 to 9 and the number 9 to 10. With that modification, is there any other discussions? And I would take that as a friendly amendment.
That is a friendly amendment.
All right. And if there's no opposition, the rules are adopted as amended through their friendly amendment. So that brings us to the next stage, which is basically the purpose of why we're here today. My understanding is we have a complaint that has been filed that the committee has been asked to review, and today is our time to review the complaint and make an investigation and make appropriate findings regarding this matter. So with that, Rick, I'm going to ask you, I guess, to lay the framework as to the complaint itself.
We'll be able to do a work session.
Oh, and at this point, the chair is moving us into a work session on the complaint that's before us, and I was looking for it is the complaint dated January 30th, 2009, pursuant to rule Senate Rule 3.33, work session is open.
Okay. And I'll briefly read this. You do have a copy of this in your packet. This is the letter dated January 30th, 2009, to Secretary Judy Hall. We then signed our filing a complaint under Senate Rule 3.33 against Senate President Peter Courtney on January 28th, 2009. The Oregon Senate approved two bills, Senate Bill 338 and Senate Bill 5562, which were sponsored by Senator Courtney. Included in these bills was $31,861,000 for Western Oregon University, WOU. We allege that Senator Courtney's employment at WOU represents a potential conflict of interest as defined by ORS 244.020.
And I think that's fine for what we need to do.
Okay.
There is within this complaint, as noted in for the record, which is part of the record, that the statute itself is laid forth with sub 11 being the area. of concern. My understanding is that we will be looking at is whether or not there's a potential potential conflict of interest as it pertains to President Peter Courtney's actions regarding those two bills. Does anyone have any questions regarding what our charge is today? If not, then at this point, what the chair would like to do is move forward as to determining, you know, what the framework of a potential of conflict of interest is. And I'm going to ask Dexter Johnson to come forward.
Senator Courtney.
Yeah. Senator Courtney, I was going to allow you to make a statement. I thought maybe you might want to do it after this, but if you'd like to do it now.
Can I be allowed to do it now, please?
Yes.
If the committee would allow me to do so.
You bet. It'd be our privilege.
Members of the Special Committee on Conduct, my name is Peter Courtney, and I live in Salem, and I'm a state senator, and I am president of the Oregon State Senate, and I am the subject of the complaint that is before the committee today. On January 22nd, in the afternoon, in a subcommittee on Ways and Means of Capital Construction, I co-chair that committee, we did consider two bills, Senate Bill 338 and Senate Bill 5562. The bills contain bonding authority for deferred maintenance and capital construction. Those bills contain deferred maintenance capital construction projects on the campus of Western Oregon University, among other state agencies and other universities. I'm employed by Western Oregon University. We voted both those bills to the full Ways and Means Committee, and prior to voting for those two bills, I noted on the record that I had a potential conflict of interest since I worked for Western Oregon University. The bills then went to the Senate floor, as you may recall, on January 28th. We debated those bills, and we passed those bills. I voted yes for both the bills. I even spoke on one of the bills. I did not note on the floor at that time I had a potential conflict of interest. I simply forgot. I forgot to do that. The following Friday, between 4 and 5 o'clock, a complaint was brought into my office by the Secretary of the Senate, signed by two members of the Republican Party, that I had violated the Senate Rule 3.33 for failing to declare a potential conflict of interest for not before I voted for those two pieces of legislation. I asked Legislative Council at the time for an opinion as to whether, in fact, I did have a potential conflict of interest. Prior to Monday's session, the Legislative Council advised me that I did not have a conflict of interest on either one of those measures in a written opinion, and I believe a copy of that opinion is before the committee today. Nevertheless, my fellow senators, just to be safe and to avoid even the appearance of impropriety, I was advised by the Secretary of the Senate that if I would, under a proposition motion, stand up and ask for unanimous consent to suspend the rules, to be allowed to enter onto the record a potential conflict of record interest on Senate Bill 338 and 5562. I did make that motion, and the Senate permitted me to make that, to go ahead and file my potential conflicts of interest. I'm very grateful to the Senate to do that. To summarize, the Legislative Council has advised me that I did not have a conflict of interest on either one of these measures. If in the opinion of the committee that I did have a potential conflict, I believe that I have complied with the Senate rules, first declaring such a conflict in committee, and second obtaining unanimous consent from the Senate to suspend the rules so that I could declare a potential conflict of interest on the floor. For the record, we have allowed in the past individuals who have also forgotten to declare such a potential conflict to also ask for suspension of rules to do so. At no time did I intend to violate the rules. At no time did I intend to hide any potential conflict of interest I have. I'm very grateful the committee would allow me to come here today and to make a statement. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you, President Courtney. Is there any questions? Not seeing anyone. Thank you very much for providing us with that statement.
Thank you.
At this time, the chair would like to call Dexter Johnson up, our legislative counsel, and specifically Dexter. I also had asked for an opinion regarding what the charge here is, the potential conflict of interest. I wonder if you could please advise the committee as to your position as our legislative counsel and as to that term and how that may play into the matter that's before this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council. And the task before you essentially is one of interpreting the meaning of a definition. That definition is potential conflict of interest as incorporated by reference in your rules. It is a statutory definition, however. I believe you have, as the chair mentioned, an opinion that I prepared for the chair, and I'd like to ask you to turn to page 2 of that opinion. At the very top, you will actually see the definition, potential conflict of interest, as it exists in state law set forth before you. And it's brief, so I will quickly read it. Potential conflict of interest means any action or any decision or recommendation by a person acting in a capacity as a public official, the effect of which could be to the private pecuniary benefit or detriment of the person or the person's relative or a business with which the person or the person's relative is associated. So your task as a committee is to determine whether the circumstances before you, as described by the Senate President, in fact constitute a potential conflict of interest. I would like to highlight, first of all, the standards that the courts use in interpreting statutory language like this. And that standard is set forth in a case called PGE versus Boley, and it basically says that the intent of the legislature is paramount in figuring out what a statutory provision is, and the best evidence of that intent is the plain meaning of the words used in the statute. So here in this definition, there are three elements as I see it. First, there must be an action by a person who's acting in the capacity of a public official. In this case, President Courtney is a public official, and the action that is at issue here is his voting on Senate Bill 338 and Senate Bills 5562. So that element is satisfied. The next element is that the effect of the action must be some type of private pecuniary benefit or detriment. And here I would like to emphasize what I think is a key word, the word private. The bills, as you'll recall, essentially authorized the borrowing of monies and the distribution of a portion of those monies to Western Oregon University. Western Oregon University is an institution where President Courtney is employed, but it is also a subdivision of state government. It is a part of the Oregon University system, and therefore a state agency, essentially. The transfer of those funds to Western Oregon may be a pecuniary benefit, but it is not a private pecuniary benefit, in my view, because of the use of the word private. A state agency like Western Oregon University is incapable by itself of holding a private pecuniary benefit because of its status as a public institution, as a state agency. It is only when Western Oregon itself decides, okay, we're going to hire these contractors to construct, to undertake the capital construction projects, that it becomes a private pecuniary benefit. And it isn't for the institution, it is for the contractors and other private entities that benefit as a result of the capital construction projects. The second, so that's element number two, and I don't believe that's, my opinion is that that's not satisfied because Western Oregon is incapable of having a private pecuniary benefit. The third element is that the benefit or detriment must be received by one of three types of people that are listed in the statute. Either the person who is the public official here, the person's relative, or a business with which the person or the person's relative is associated. Okay, so in other words, the third element is the benefit must be received by one of these three types of people, is the way I interpret this provision. Neither Senate Bill 338 nor 5562 nor the Oregon Constitution would allow those monies to be used for paying employee salary or benefits. President Courtney is an employee of Western Oregon, but those bills will never translate into a private pecuniary benefit for him as an employee because they will not affect his salary or benefits and cannot under both the terms of the laws and the Oregon Constitution. So I don't believe that is satisfied. Person's relative, I didn't explore that, but there's been no one has given any facts to me to indicate that a relative of Senator Courtney would receive any kind of private pecuniary benefit or detriment as a result of the legislation.
And Dexter, if I could, just on that point, it appears to me the complaint itself specifically names the president as the individual as compared to a relative or some other person that may be captured in this part of the prohibition.
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's correct. So finally, the last piece to hit on here is the term business with which the person or the person's relative is associated, or setting aside the relative, it's the business with which the person is associated. Now that too is a defined term. We're awash in definitions here, unfortunately. That term is also defined in the same law, 244.020 of the Oregon Revised Statutes. And business with which the person is associated is a long list of relationships there, but the one that's important here is set forth in the middle of the page on page 2, is if the person for a public official is required to file a statement of economic interest that reflects in which the business is listed as a source of income. Now, I assume for purposes of this opinion that in fact President Courtney does list Western Oregon University on a statement of economic interest as a source of income. However, the key element of this is the use of the word business, which is yet a third definition that we need to consider in answering this question. And business, as you can see, is also in the middle of the page there, set forth at length. And it's basically a laundry list of legal entities that can be created through which one conducts a business, including also natural persons as self-employed individuals or other legal entities. But I'd like to highlight for you the next couple of words in the definition there in the third line there. It says operated for economic gain. And it's my opinion that that operated for economic gain in fact modifies each of the legal entities listed before it, so that in order for it to be a business, essentially the entity must be operated for economic gain. This is an important distinction because, again, Western Oregon University is a public institution, a state agency, and it is my opinion that as a public institution and state agency, it is not, in fact, operated for economic gain and therefore cannot be a business for purposes of the potential conflict of interest statute. So to sum up, my findings are that the act of voting on Senate Bill 338 and 5562, in fact, were not potential conflicts of interest because there was no private pecuniary benefit or detriment, and that flowed to Senator Courtney personally, and that Western Oregon University is incapable because it is a private institution. I mean, because it is not a private institution, it is a public institution, of holding a private pecuniary benefit itself, and it is not a business for purposes of the definition of potential conflict of interest. And therefore, there is no potential conflict of interest here. And that's the essence of my...
All right. I'm going to open it up for questions, but before I do that, just clarification. Based on your review, Dexter, it appears that there are three elements that needed to be shown, and only one of those three was actually met, and that was based on the fact that President Courtney is a sitting senator, and he did, in fact, vote on those two bills.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
All right, open up for questions.
I have a question.
Senator Walker?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, I read the opinion at length and listened to your explanation, and it seems like the final test that it's not an institution, a business that would generate money for private gain, then that really nullifies everything else. But let me ask this question. Hypothetically, I don't know if Senator Courtney has relatives in the construction business or not, but if he did and one of them got belonged to a company that bid on a job that worked on construction, would that then become a pecuniary interest?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, I think the... not with respect to the vote, because it simply goes to the institution. It would be the institution's decision, okay, we're going to hire this contractor, and if Senator Courtney was part of that decision in his capacity as a Western Oregon official at that point,
Okay, that's what I thought, and I just wanted to clarify that, because we don't know how many relatives we have existing out there and if anyone's ever going to get hired to do something where we voted on something, but that clarifies that question. So, thank you.
Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dexter, if I could refer you to the first page of your letter under the heading Law. The way I read this, the rules of the Senate provide that when a senator is involved in a potential conflict of interest as defined in ORS 244.020, the senator shall announce on the Senate floor, and the word I key on here in your letter is or, in the committee meeting. And I'm wondering, is that a definitive direction for us as legislators that if the announcement is made in committee, it is not then required on the floor?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, that's an excellent question. It's arguable that it could be read that way, but I think there actually is separate actions as public officials here. First, the vote in the committee. So if this were taking place in the committee, that direction in the rules requires you to declare the potential conflict at the time you're voting in the committee. And then once the bill moves to the floor, again, I think there's a separate action there. That is the full floor vote, where you would, under the rules, again declare a potential conflict.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Just a follow-up, a clarification. So prudency would say that you would do both the potential in the subcommittee as well as once it reached the floor. That's what I hear you saying.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, that's correct.
But I want to go back to the case, because you kind of clarified the distinction between private and public. And so if one, in this case, Senator Courtney is working for a public entity and not a private entity, that then changes the, quote, potential conflict of interest. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, that's correct. If President Courtney were an employee of Willamette, for example, and the bill, in fact, transferred monies to Willamette, that would be an entirely different issue.
And now I have a question if you're done.
I am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So let me ask you this question, because I was provided with a copy of the Senate Journal that goes back through
Well, in 2003, I myself did the same thing as Senator Courtney. Senator Beyer did. In 2007, Senator Westland did. In 2007, also Senator Gordley and Senator George and Senator Messerly in those sessions, and here again, Senator Beyer. So it appears, and Senator Verdick, and Senator Fisher. So it appears this is not an uncommon practice in the Senate, after a vote is taken and someone has overlooked declaring a potential conflict of interest, to ask permission from the Senate to declare a potential conflict of interest. Is there anything wrong with that? Is that allowed under the rule? Does that satisfy a test in your mind?
Mr. Chair, Senator Walker, it is, you're correct. The Senate Journal appears to reflect that it is a common practice to allow a declaration of a potential conflict after the vote is taken.
Let me do this. This may be going into an area that we haven't gone into yet as to how that all takes place, the procedure that's required. And I'm going to ask...
Question from Ms. Hall, maybe?
I didn't hear what you said.
I said, is that a question Ms. Hall should perhaps answer?
No, I think at this point what I was going to do is... What I want to do is clarify and, let's say, limit our questions and focus to the potential conflict of interest as compared to something after the fact. And if we need to go there, we will go there. But I'd like to just make sure we take care of...
Was there a potential conflict or not?
That's correct.
And then we don't even have to get to question two.
That's correct.
Well, I agree with you, and I guess that's a discussion for a later date about whether after the fact works for us.
Now, the chair is looking at what the letter says here as to the complaint. The complaint is that the president, because of his employment at WOU, represents a potential conflict of interest. And that, to me, is what is before us at this point. And so what the chair was going to be asking, and once we went through the questions on the potential conflict of interest, is to determine whether or not we agree with the legislative council as to his interpretation. Because what I have taken away from this, there are three elements that are required to be proven to show that there is a requirement to actually put onto the record the potential conflict of interest. And only the first element, based on the... Senator Courtney being a public official who voted on those two bills, was satisfied, and the other two elements that would be required were not. And if we are in agreement with that, then I think we have concluded to the point of where we can make our findings. If that's not the case, then I'm more than willing to entertain other discussions as to whether or not there is some type of remedy that may have occurred based on his actions after that occurrence. So, again, trying to narrow to what's here, and so the question, since we are in work session, and Dexter, I'd like for you to stay there, because as we discuss this, just to make certain if there's any other questions, since you are our legal counsel, and I'm wanting to open it up as to if anyone disagrees with the position that I've taken as to what we've been told. I am satisfied with the analysis that has been brought forward by legislative counsel. And it's my belief, based on what we have before us today, that there is no potential conflict of interest that needed to be declared on the record in the first place. Clearly, all of us have, let's say, erred on the side of caution and have said that we've had maybe a potential conflict of interest. And I know that I have questioned why I do it at times or why other people do it, thinking there's no conflict there. But just being more safe and sure, instead of having running the course of maybe having something in a way of a conflict that we may not have fully appreciated. And so I'd like to have that discussion as to whether any of the members believe, contrary to what the opinion is before us and the statements we've heard from counsel, whether or not you think that there is actually was a potential conflict of interest that needed to be declared on the record. So we're open.
Well, Ms. Chair, I just wanted to respond, and thank you for reminding us what our narrow focus is, because you're right. The question is, did the senator violate did he have a potential conflict of interest? And I believe the record clearly shows he did not. So we don't have to get to the second question of when did he announce that conflict? And that's for another day about other issues for those who do have a potential conflict of interest and forget. And you're right, out of an abundance of caution, many of us do that frequently because we're fearful that we may violate this rule because we're not better than anyone else. We live by the law. And so often we declare a potential conflict of interest when one does not exist. And I believe in this case, Senator Courtney did that, as well as Representative Nathanson, because I did read I played the DVD that was provided to us, and I listened to the committee, and both Senator Courtney and Representative Nathanson, who works for the University of Oregon, declared potential conflicts of interest, and neither of them needed to,
right.
Based on what we've learned today. So I think we have answered the question, and I do not find, in my view, that Senator Courtney had a conflict.
I would have to concur, and I was at the committee when both Senator Courtney and Representative Nathanson declared their conflict of interest, and I think, and I agree, all of us have gotten into really a habit of just merely doing conflict of interest statements, whether there is a conflict or not, because of this cloud. And you want to make certain that there really isn't. We've gone so far saying a potential conflict of interest for maybe a relative, and it's somebody in Alaska someplace. So I would agree. Based on the definition and that Dexter has given us, I don't see a conflict. We're talking about a private institute. We're talking about a public institution that he happens to be an employee of. There is no, I don't think, when we look at business, the Western is not a business. It is an institution of higher learning that is public, and so the benefit for him isn't there. And I was trying to follow Dexter when he talked about the pecuniary benefit to the person that is the standard. And I can't find it in this case, and so I don't believe that there is a conflict, and so I would have to agree with Senator Walker.
Senator Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe legislative counsel has done an excellent job of identifying the facts, the law, and analysis, and I agree with their conclusion. This does raise the question and the concern for members when, we'll take for example, if we're voting on revenue measures that affect every taxpayer in this state, it can have a positive benefit or a detrimental benefit to us individually. You know, are we going to be now thinking about, well, we're going to declare conflicts of interest? Well, that's kind of silly. So if you read the letter of the law, we would be spending a lot of our time declaring potential or actual conflicts of interest. So you know, I don't know where you go with this.
Senator Morris, what I would say, and would ask for Dexter to clarify, but when you have that type of bill that's before us that impacts basically the whole, the greater, larger portion that we may be a subset or a part of, has been my understanding that the rulings do not require us to actually put on the record that potential conflict. It's again, as you said, so awfully placed in this opinion, looking at these three elements and looking at the key components as to more of a direct, immediate benefit to either ourselves or a relative that is in a private pecuniary relationship. And Dexter, other comments?
Mr. Chair and Senator Morris, there is an exception that is irrelevant to this situation, so it's not in the opinion. But if you are a member of a class, say taxpayers or some other class that can readily be identified that is unrelated to your actual individual status as a legislator, and your decision will affect the class the same, then in fact there is no potential conflict of interest there either. And I think in your example,
that would apply.
Yeah.
So, I was just thinking that since both of the bill in question and Western actually is in Senator Winters' district, even though Senator Courtney is the employee.
So let me see, since it seems like we're all on the same page as to what the findings show us, I'm just going to summarize. It's my understanding that the committee is in agreement unanimously that we accept the letter opinion as to that was provided to me as the chair, dated February 9th of 2009, that basically gives us an analysis and determines that in this particular situation, that President Peter Courtney did not have a potential conflict of interest that needed to be actually disclosed and announced before any of the votes that he took, and that based on the review and analysis of the facts and the laws and applying it, that elements 2 and 3 were not met, that only element 1, that he, being a sitting senator, voting on a bill was in fact met, and so that the other two prongs of the test were not satisfied. And because of that, we as a committee find that there was no potential conflict of interest that needed to be declared by President Courtney regarding the votes of those two bills, which were Senate Bill 338 and Senate Bill 5562.
Mr. Chair, would you entertain a motion?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move the committee adopt these findings as summarized and report these findings to the Senate.
Senator Winters moves that the committee adopt these findings as summarized and report the findings to the Senate. Is there any discussion? Not seeing any. This time, I am going to ask the court, the clerk to call the roll.
Senator Morris.
Aye.
Senator Walker.
Aye.
Vice Chair Winters.
Aye.
Aye. The roll call vote showing an unanimous majority of the vote required for passage. The motion passes and the findings are adopted and will be reported to the Senate in its appropriate means. And I will close that off. And, Council, I believe that takes care, or I should say, Mr. Administrator, I assume that should take care of the work that we have today.
Yes, sir.
And with that, is there any other comments that need to be made on the record before we conclude our work today?
Only, Mr. Chair, is our appointment to this special committee, is that through the legislative session?
It is.
Okay.
They'll meet at the call of the chair.
Yeah.
Okay.
And hopefully we will not be calling anyone else for any more meetings. But if so, with the understanding and caveat, if any of the four of us should be ones that were having some type of complaint, we would expect would be recused and have another member substitute in place.
We didn't really mention that in our rules, but as long as we understand that,
I assume
and
the,
said that on the
leadership of the body will make sure that is understood and
right.
Followed.
Okay.
And that is for the Secretary of the Senate as well as the President of the Senate.
All right.
Any other comments?
No, thank you.
Thank you.
If not, we'll go ahead and conclude our work for today, and we're adjourned.